Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, America, and good morning, world. Good morning, America, and good morning, world. I hope everyone is well and blessed, doing the best they can in their current situation. Hang on, folks, hang on. Trust me, help and change, positive change, is on the way. Okay, now today is September the 18th of the year 2016, and man, oh man, change is on its way. Change is coming. I've been talking about this for a couple of years, knowing the things that I know behind the scenes, being fortunate enough to hear and speak with some people that are, I call authors. They truly decide how the earth evolves. Like you've heard me say before, God holds the earth in his hand, and the powers that be make it rotate. And that's an amazing thing, there are some very, very powerful people in this world, beyond imagination, beyond the common knowledge of their existence, but they do exist. And it's pretty bizarre. If you just think for a moment, how wealthy would the people or persons be that created the world monetary system? How wealthy do you think they would be if they created the monetary system? Would they be millionaires? I don't think so. Would they be billionaires? Still a little bit too commonplace. But they could easily, and they are trillionaires in this world. They are not known or they're not visible. They don't make themselves readily available to common knowledge, but they do exist. You can, matter of fact, you can Google it. You know, go to Google and start doing some research on it. You know, you'll find them. Just change words around. Trillionaires and, who are they and different things like that. You'll do some work. Do some homework. You'll find all the things that I ever talk about. You will find out there by simply doing a little bit of research and due diligence. I suggest that, and I know that the human being, in this day and time is getting more knowledgeable via the dissemination of information. Things are readily available via, a couple of key clicks and you're, into whatever type of information or knowledge you can imagine. It's a very interesting time in which we live. When I was a little fellow, a young boy, we didn't have the luxuries and the convenience, of such a powerful, powerful mechanisms or tools such as the internet and high-speed computers and different things like that. We had to learn things the old-fashioned way, books and verbal teachings and things that were passed down through generations. And quite frankly and honestly, the knowledge was limited. It was very limited. It was just the evolution of time at that day and time. That's why I always say, through the dissemination of information, the world is changing and becoming more wiser, more smarter, more intellectual. And we're at a very interesting paradigm. We're at a very interesting crossroad, if you will, at this day and time. And it's a beautiful thing because it's something that I've talked about for years, years and years and years. I started a knowledge or an enlightenment campaign 30-some years ago, and I'm just dating myself a little bit, but that's okay. And it was well ahead of its time. the concept really hasn't caught on yet in our human evolution. It has for some walks of life, but for others, it has certainly eluded a certain group of people. We're going to touch on that. We're going to square up on that very heavily here in just a moment. Let me write that down. Okay. So I won't forget to comment on that today. And I may have already, but okay. But anyhow, when you hear me say that change and help and, you know, change is coming, I'm more specifically speaking to the downtrodden and the least fortunate of people on the planet is who I'm really directing this comment to and have all along the way for years. Now we're seeing direct evidence of this change coming to light, coming to pass. It is prophesied. You know, prophecy is an interesting thing. It truly, truly is, because the prophecy is man's prophecy, you know, man's prophetic, you know, testimony to humankind. When you look at prophecy, when you look at, you know, prophecy such as the biblical prophecy, and there's some things that, you know, that are starting to come out, come to light in this regard that are pretty heavy and pretty deep. And I've been talking about it for years, at least 30. But, and I'll touch on just a little bit of it right here and now. Is it in the early scripture of Genesis, it says, you know, that man is created from the earth, is created in Ethiopia, which would be Africa, and in early Christianity or Christian teachings, the books of the Bible were filled with Caucasian people, with porcelain skinned people. Now, how many do you think were in Ethiopia, Africa at the beginning of time? And what happened if that was the case? Did they all catch suntans and turn, you know, what we call blue black? I think not. You can't do anyone that way today. If a Caucasian person was out in the sun, I don't care, until he got, you know, burned up, you know, sad, and I know it's painful, but he does not and will not ever evolve to a, you know, dark chocolate, dark black, blue black, brown individual. Not genetically possible. Melanin is the capturing gene, a genetic evidence in our skin and in our bodies, our beings, that collect the sun, the elements of the sun to create or to I would say to vary or create a variation of one's skin tone. Okay, now, however, if you take that same blue-black individual and migrate him from an African climate, which is hot and sunny each and every day with curly hair and large nostrils to deal with the sun's, what the sun does in purpose on this earth is to warm and to preserve and to nurture and to grow and to, you know, to allow life to flourish. And take that individual and take him to a colder region, which would be maybe in the Caucasus Mountains, Caucasian Caucasus Mountains, to whereabouts, you know, in the African continent or in Ethiopia, you find a Grimaldi skull, which is millions of years old. And you can go to the Caucasus region of the earth where you find the Cro-Magnon skull. And they're only about 40,000 years old, okay? But you can clearly trace the migration from that man in Africa to that man in the Caucasus Mountain, the Caucasus region. Okay? Now, but then along that way, you have a genie out of color, characteristics, thinner nose, thin hair, all these things that are not genetically needed in certain environments and regions as man migrated. Okay, so anyhow, that's where all of this, you know, comes from. Now, go do the research for yourself. Look up the Grimaldi skull. Look up the Cro-Magnon skull. You know, look up the, you know, this migration. Look at the earth plates. Look at, you know, Peter's projection. And you can see how the earth plates are together and how man could actually and did actually walk, migrate from one part to the other, you see. But he had to start in one portion of the earth in order to survive, being, in a certain, in an unclothed state. You got to understand, a man wasn't just popped up here and next thing you know, he's wearing a two-piece or three-piece suit. That didn't occur either. That's certainly a migratory and an evolutionary process as well, right? A process of evolution as well. So, again, do your research there. Do your anthropology. Do a little paleontology and all that kind of great stuff, and you'll find the truth that I speak of here, not because what I say or what man says, but what is simply the truth and the will of God, if you will, because he is the one that decided who was where, when, what, and how. All right? So when I say that hang on and help, and the help and change is coming and is on the way, you're starting to see now more and more, and you will see this increase tremendously, the outreach of help and assistance to Africa, the mother continent. You're going to see this. I've been talking about this for years. I worked 30-some years ago with Kwame Nkrumah, and let me get these people straight now. Stokely Carmichael was his American name. His name was either Kwame Nkrumah or Sekou Touré. I can't remember exactly who he went, which one he went by, but, you know, was it Kwame Nkrumah? Well, anyhow, his name was Stokely Carmichael. All right, and Vandele Tayemba, way back 30-some years ago. And, starting movements of knowledge and information, you know, and dissemination of information, you know, to help an oppressed people and a downtrodden people. And it shouldn't be any hatred or indifference of feelings towards anyone for a people to strive for economic equality, economic, you know, betterment of one's group. When, you know, the playing field has been, you know, let's say imbalanced, you know, for so many years. I don't really like to necessarily place blame on a group of people for creating such an imbalance. Even though that there was, you know, a help or an assistance for it to be imbalanced. But I more want to look at the less fortunate or the downtrodden to embetter, you know, to make an embetterment of themselves, to create an economic leverage, you know, for themselves, and to correct their own and themselves. You see, this is where the great change will come, and the only place the great change will come from. Okay, but like I said, you're starting to see more and more outreach programs to Africa, monetary, you know, solicitations and different things like that. Folks, you know, like I said, what they got going on in this thing of nation building and the transformation of wealth. This is real, people. This is absolutely real, and you better wake up and open your eyes to the change, to the transformation, because a lot of people are, even after I tell them, they're very naive and very, nonchalant about it because they simply don't, you know, we've lived life in this manner, in this way for so long that we can't even fathom living life any different way. But I'm sure the great Romans of the Roman Empire, at a certain point in time and day in their life, they felt the exact same way, a sense of invincibility, you know, being invincible. But, of course, we all know that it did fall. And Rome was way out there, technologically speaking, aqueducts and different types of mathematical type things and the structures that they built. Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, they were only second to the Egyptians, you see. And that's strong. That's a powerful thing. So there's a lot of people, you know, that lived on this earth and to be considered, you know, number two in evolution is very powerful. So here we are today. And that change is coming, you know, over us, through us. And the powers that be, like I say, these mega wealthy individuals and families, you know, are moving their wealth to create more wealth. The beautiful and blessed thing about this transformation, folks, that it does involve the original man, the original human being, the eldest human being on the planet. One would ask, how old is the oldest human being on the planet? We certainly know of, you know, a little biped that we call Lucy. She clearly was given evidence of her existence at about 3.5 million years ago. We have the bones. They have the bones. They have, you know, anthropological data, you know, to analyze, to prove, you know, of her existence and like beings, you know, in her day and time. I was watching I think it was a public television broadcast one day, and they stepped out and dared to say that there was a being, a biped, which means simply walked upon 2 feet, that was dated to be 5 million years old, right there in the same region of Africa. Now, if we miss this mark by, say, for instance, 3 million years, or let's say 2.5 million years, that still leaves 1 million years that there is a definite reality of a humanoid or human-like, you know, being walking the earth, living and multiplying and surviving, thriving, you know, in that region of the world. Okay, and then we can chop it up and come on the way up, you know. And I mean, the truth that, you know, is there within. Okay, so, but now we're starting to see the evidence of this transformation of wealth. Now, as this money goes pouring over to Africa, you can best believe that the authors are there, already in place. This is why they are taking out or killing off the Muammar Gaddafis and the Saddam Hussein and the, you know, the guy that they're dealing with now, you know, Al-Assad. You know, this is why they have to go, because they can't go over there. We can't go over there and start developing and building nations with bullets flying around and mortars and different things like that and rebels and all this other kind of nonsense, you know, counterproductive, you know, nonsense is what it is. But, you know, it has been put in place for a certain reason. A lot of people, a lot of powerful men do not want the evolution or the non-oppression or the rising of the common people that are, or the lower downtrodden in their lands and stuff, because they have to give up their power and their wealth and all the things that they have stolen, you know, over the years will be released back into the people. And I mean, you can understand why they put up such a fight. Their families live good. They got fresh, clean drinking water. They probably, you know, crap on gold toilets and have gold fixtures and, you know, just, you know, imaginable wealth, you know, in the billions, you know, whereabouts, you know, there's people, you know, 20 miles away from where they live in their palaces that are struggling, suffering, can't find, you know, food to eat or water to drink. And that's not right in the eyes of anyone conscious, and certainly in the eyes of God, the Most High. So, like I said, the consequences of this change is beneficial to the downtrodden and common person in these regions of the earth, because that change is coming, that they will have fresh, clean drinking water and, you know, toilets, you know, to eliminate on, and sewage systems to contain the eliminations. And they will no longer have to go to the river to drink, you know, downstream from cattle and livestock and different things like that, and get dysentery and all these other type of, you know, bacterial diseases and ingestations, you know, that are certainly not, doesn't have a place on the planet in this year of 2016 that we live in. It is just it is unhuman, okay, for it to even exist today. But change is coming. It's on its way. And that's the change I've been speaking about all along for years. So now you know what it is. So now we all get on the same bandwagon and usher it in and make it happen, because it's inevitable. The powers that be are doing this and saying this, and so shall it be. All right, now, let's jump back a little bit on, because we're going to tie a little bit of political thing into it as well. Mr. Trump, you know, talked about the birther issue with Mr. Obama, President Obama, trying to really discredit him as being the first African, successful African-American president. I think his ratings are really up around 58, you know, closer to 60%, you know. And if he keeps on going the way he's going, it's going to be well over 60%. I mean, that's just unheard of. That's just remarkable. But you know what that is? That is the truth coming to light. That is doing and living and guiding, excuse me, a nation and a people in the right way, not in, you know, a bigoted way or a anti-government way or any of that other kind of counterproductive, counter-evolutionary, you know, type nonsense. It's archaic, it's, you know, man, it's barbaric, and it's amazing. It's just so way back in its way of thinking and being. It's ridiculous, you know. It just kind of blows my mind that more people don't really see, you know, the writing on the wall and what's really happening, you know, behind the scenes. Okay. So the birther issue has been put to bed pretty much. Mr. Obama is truly an African-American, his father being African, his mother being American. We have to start using this to describe the African-American people, or the Africans in America. This is what it truly is. It's a true depiction. We are Africans in America. No one is indigenous to America but the Native Americans. Native Americans. Everyone else is an immigrant or someone that has been brought here and scattered amongst a people. Okay? Who has been scattered? Look that up. Scattering. What is scattering? Scattering is an involuntary dispersion. When you scatter something, you take it like a handful of sand and pick it up and fling it back into the ocean. That's scattering. That's what happened to the Africans that were brought to America. They were scattered amongst a people. Okay. What was the scattering?
We have a buck here, 125, sold to the man in Kentucky. We have a winch here and a sucker, 150, sold to the man in Virginia. We have, you know, two children here, two suckers here, two, you know, young children, buck children here, and a young winch. You know, how much for the two? $200, you know, sold to the man in, you know, Tennessee. I'm just making up places and stuff. But this is the scattering, folks. And then you go look and find out who were the scattered people, the only ones scattered amongst, you know, land they did not know or a people. And you will find the children of Israel, the true children of Israel. You got to remember that the Israeli people in Israel were brought into concentration in Germany. Concentrate means to be brought together, not scattered. Okay, now we're going to move on to health. We're looking at both health records from Mr. Donald Trump and Mrs. Hillary Clinton. I question Donald Trump's doctor. If you look at this guy, I see quack. I don't see doctor hiding behind them dark round shades, you know, talking kind of way out there in left field. I see quack. You know, we really need to check his credentials, or Mr. Trump needs to get a second opinion. I wouldn't trust that guy no further than I can throw him. He might put together, you know, put a nice, you know, roll a nice, what they call, when they roll the marijuana up in a cigar wrapper, blunt, you know, or something like that. But I wouldn't trust him on the, you know, on the level the doctor said. No, he's a little too shady. So anyhow, we need to look into that. Hear me out, heirs of influence. What is he really all about? Because that doesn't seem valid to me. The polls. Folks, I had heard a guy come on there. He was a Caucasian gentleman. And he said that these polls that they're talking about that are out today are worthless. They absolutely worthless. So why in the world do we continue to talk about polls? Polls, like I say, folks, a tightening of the polls. And the Quinnipiac poll. Quinnipiac, how many black people even know what a Quinnipiac poll is? How many Hispanic people, furthermore, know what a Quinnipiac poll? And Asian and Indian, you know, Native American, none of these people even have a clue what a Quinnipiac poll is. I didn't know until I looked it up. Look it up for yourself. And then find out where it's located at. And that the people around there that would vote in that Quinnipiac poll. These polls would definitely show a tightening of the race because there's no, you know, it's all Caucasian voters. And there's only 3,000 of them sampled in the Quinnipiac poll. And there's no, says I got 60 seconds. Love one another, take care of one another. It's the right thing to do. That's what God wants to be, simply because God is love. But I'm going to keep on talking. So this guy is right. This guy is absolutely on point that these polls are worthless. And then they got the poll of polls, ABC poll of polls, and all that other kind of nonsense. Black folks don't vote in polls. A lot of times polls want to collect information. And you know black folks are very funny about, let me backtrack on that. African-American people are very funny about this volunteering information. We just simply are. Hispanic people are even more funny, you know, about it. And Indian people, they just don't do it, you know. And you know, Asian people, they don't do it. So all of this stuff about, you know, the polls are tightening, the polls, yeah, for Caucasian voters, you know, be it a Democrat or a Republican, but it has nothing to do with a true depiction of the voting mentality or mindset of the American people, of all of the American people. I am the American people. I have not voted in one poll. And I monitor and follow politics, religion, and way of life daily. And I've never voted in a poll. So all of this stuff about poll this and poll that, it's wore out. It's just burnt out. And I'm glad to hear people starting to stand up against it because they're really irrelevant when they're not sampled properly in the correct demographic that would give a true depiction of the poll. or the mindset and mentality of the all of the American people. This is nonsense. This is about as bad as Trump sitting up there in front of his audience and saying, "I love you," and he never says, "And God bless the United States of America." I've yet to hear this man say that. I have yet to hear him say, "And God bless the United States of America." And you want this guy to be your president? You want to give him a second thought about being a president? Now, I may be wrong, but I purposely look at some of his most important speeches, and I did not hear those words come through his mouth. So how can he have it in his heart? How can he have it in his mind? You want to ask yourself that when you go to the poll. Where is taxes? Where are his taxes? Now, this right here, folks, he is fighting this tax issue because there's something in these taxes that are very, 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 very incriminating. If it wasn't, he's so arrogant that he would throw them out there, he'd publish it himself and plaster it to the side of his airplane, the Trump aircraft. You know, there's something in there that ties him in. I'd be willing to bet with Russia through Paul Manafort. That's why they fired this guy, got rid of him, because there's some type of monetary dealings in his taxes that they are probably trying to redo, delete, hide out, that will show him clearly evading payment unto the government. I know that's what it is. And this action, this very action, would disqualify him from being the president of the United States. I promise you, this is what it is. Okay? Now, Mr. Trump's mission was not ever to become the president of the United States, but to dismantle the Republican Party and hand it to Hillary Clinton. If you notice, when Mrs. Clinton got sick, Mr. Trump said, back up. Don't attack her when she's in this mode, when she's in this way. No. That right there was a telling thing for me, that he is still in the Clinton Foundation. He is still as he was a major investor into the Clinton Clinton Foundation, he's still a part of that body. You see, and the mission and objective of all of them is one world order, one world government. When you are moving to that position in the world, which is going to be most powerful, and I'm kind of not wanting to fight. I'm not going to fight it, you know, at all. I'll tell you that right now. Because when you look, it's already in Daniel 7:3, joining of the eagle and the bear. That would be the Soviet Union and the United States of America. And this is why Mr. Trump is making these statements. Wouldn't it be nice if the United States and Russia get along and his audience just goes bananas? Yeah. They don't even know what they're saying yeah to. They don't even know what they're hounding about. I think there's an applaud thing, the light comes on, and they just respond to it. But what he's setting up, folks, is the world superpower, the United States and the Soviet Union, or the Russian Federation, I'm sorry, that they are formally called now. Red, white, and blue flag with a red, white, and blue flag. Flags are powerful. They have a lot of meaning, folks. Look it up for yourself. But if these two could ever come together, right now they're doing a joint military coalition. When the military is a coalition, then the nations follow in a coalition or collaborative position. And that would be the joining of the eagle and the bear. And the one very, very powerful, you know, existence or leadership for the global leadership, an economic and a global powerhouse. So think about that for a minute. It would be very, very decisive. No one would, you know, dare really to, you know, stand up against it, and would much rather come along and be a part of it, to be opposed of it. And we could work this thing out in the word, in the will of righteousness, you know, under the will of God. And you ask yourself, how can the prophecy be on earth as it is in heaven? in heaven, it would be peace, and it had to be peace on earth. And peace on earth means there's no adversary. One world order, one world government, one way of life, and that would be righteousness for all mankind. We can do this, and this concept is catching on. I've been talking about it for years, I mean decades, and the concept is really now starting to catch on through the dissemination of information, and quite possibly even because of the things I've said and the things that I say. This is doable. This is reality. This is very reasonable. You know, just think about if the world could get along, you know, economically. You know, how strong the world, you know, of our existence would be. We could live greater in peace than we can in war. Longer in peace than we will at war. And it's doable. This is what I know that is catching on. I think President Obama has caught on to the concept. He's spreading this, you know, to other, you know, powerful people, you know, throughout the world. And they're saying, you know, why are we killing? Why do we kill one another? Why have we fought wars? What have we gained? What have we lost? When there is no war, what will we gain? And how little will we lose? Okay, so, I mean, this is coming. This is coming. Hang on. Change is coming. Okay, we want to be called African-Americans from this point forward. This is our true depiction. We are Africans in America, born in America, okay? Nothing wrong with that. Everything right with it. I want you to look up Dr. Ray Hagen, Christianity versus African Consciousness on YouTube. Look this up, people, please. Very, very powerful, very, very real truth being given here. This is a part of the transformation. This is a part of the change that is coming to pass. This is a part of one-ism. This is a part of one God, one people, and one way of life. You know, and we say in this great country, one nation, one nation, one nation under God, indivisible. How can there be Democrat, Republican, and all these other type of divisions? And our creed says indivisible with liberty and justice for all. The only way you can get liberty and justice for all is if there is no division, and righteousness is in its place. Okay? The council that, I also want you to look at the council that created Jesus Christ by Dr. Rick Hazen, PhD. You're going to find something very powerful in the way of indoctrination. Okay? Indoctrination. And folks, this is healing medicine. This is healing information. This is not hate dividing information. This is bringing us all together as one in reality, in truth, because we know what the truth will do. It will make us free or set us free. It doesn't set us free from physical bondage, but it makes us free from spiritual and mental bondage. This is what this, you know, the truth shall make ye free. This is what that means. Not from physical bondage, but from mental and spiritual bondage. And once we become free of the spiritual and mental bondage that we have been because of different religions and ways of life, then we can all come back as one God with one people and one simple way of life, and that's righteousness. Okay, but these myths have to be broken first. This is why I'm sending you to listen to this individual and to find like information. This is about freedom. Free in your mind, free in your spirit. Colin Kaepernick movement, that thing is growing like wildfire. They're not putting everything out there that the people are actually doing about what, you know, his position. It's not about the man, folks. It's about the message. It's about the message. He was just courageous enough to stand up, you know, and to be the first to demand, you know, justice. You don't need to be shooting all these people that you're shooting. Some need, yeah, if they draw down on your shore, you got to protect yourself and all this other kind of stuff. Call for backup. Don't do it with just one and two people. You know, have a you know, 10 or 50, a strong showing of a police, you know, presence. I'm sure the outcomes will be a lot different. You know, a lot more, you know, lives will be saved. Like Alton Sterling and Brother Mr. Castillo and all them, they didn't have to die. They wasn't supposed to die. There was another Hispanic man just the other day, shot by another Hispanic man, Mr. Villarreal, shot, I can't remember the other Hispanic guy's name, but shot him. He only gave him a half a second, literally, folks, to raise his hand. This is Hispanic on Hispanic, brother. You know, hands up. Get your and before he could pull his hands out of his pocket, good pow pow, he's dead. Come on now. It's not right. It's not right. We need to get this, change all of this, this fear and all this other kind of stuff has to go away. It's a dual process, the perpetrator and the protector. You know, it has to be vetted on both sides of the fence or the equation. One world order is what this is about. Donald Trump, one world order. Colin Kaepernick, he's just like Christ. That's what I'm telling you. He just stand up as a revolutionary, evolutionary to the power. Okay? So we have to fix it. We have to work on it. And we have to do it openly and, you know, and show that it's being done. Okay? Let's see. Okay, I talked about the Donald Trump. Oh, let me run this concept right before I go, and I may not get time for it. But there's about 40 million African Americans in America, all right? If we take half of them away for the elderly and the children that can't contribute to this particular fund, I'm calling this the African American Central Investment Fund, AACIF. I'm putting this out there. I put it out there a long time ago, but I wanted to start actually coming to fruition. If we could, we're taking away 20 million of African Americans, and we got 20 million left. If each of those 20 million people contributed $1 per week to the African American Central Investment Fund, you see, that's $20 million per week, $80 million per month, and well over $1 billion per year, as pure economic leverage to bring ourselves up out of the condition that we're in. Okay, because the scripture does say that we shall be the lender. And not the borrower. That's following the same lineage as the children of Israel. It shall be the head, not the tail. Shall be above and not beneath. But most, you know, importantly, be the lender and not the borrower. How do we get there? This is an equation. This is a simple mathematical, doable thing that needs to start taking place because we're not supposed to sit around and wait for the Caucasian man, you know, to better our communities and clean up our communities and clean up our way of life and, you know, stop the, you know, the violence amongst one another and all this other kind of thing. It's not their job. It's not God's, you know, purpose, you know, for them, you know, and we're not fulfilling the purpose for who we are supposed to be. But if we do something in the way of collective economics, you're going to start seeing this more and more. You don't hear about this in the community. You don't hear about it pretty much across the board anywhere. But collective economics is the strongest force on the planet when you're talking about, you know, survival, the survival of a people. We heard just today when we talk about Black Wall Street, that was collective economics to the nth degree. That's collective economics in motion. It's so powerful that the United States government had to bomb it to destroy it. Because it was on its way to be too, too powerful and too, too enlightening, you see. But here we are today in 2016 with the opportunity to do it again and to do it right. We don't necessarily need a great big old $500 million African-American museum in Washington, D.C. Nice, but unnecessary. We got African-American museums all over the United States. We know enough about our African-American history. We know enough about the past. What are we going to do about bettering the future? This is why I say the African American Central Investment Fund is a key element in making this a reality. We lend to our own. We teach our own. We nurture our own. We educate, you know, and it's not just limited to African American people. It's to all people, all walks of life. Because when you say you are the lender, it doesn't mean lender just to one people, but we have to creatively create the leverage to get that position to be that people. And this is how we can do it. Simply, question I get a lot of times, well, who's going to watch the money? We got fear already at the start. Anything even out the gate yet. Who's going to watch the money? God will watch the money. And God-like people will be his, you know, will be his people to make this all come to pass. Oprah Winfrey on the OWN Network and different things like that and all these different, you know, powerful and very wealthy people, of course, they can contribute more to make it more of a reality much more quicker.